accession number 18269, Reel 7.
Mr. Dow, Reel 7.
Right. The next episode was the 70 div was moved to somewhere east of Calcutta, and I found that I was detailed off to be camp commandant for the advance party in Calcutta itself. Everything seemed to work out quite well. The officers' mess, as such, in Calcutta, was a Rani's private house, which was quite large. And because it was whitewashed, pink in colour, it came to be known as the Pink Chin Palace. I can't remember we ever had any problems in Calcutta itself. My main duty seemed to be paying little teenage boy cleaners once a week, and for that purpose I think I learnt my only complete sentence of Urdu, namely Tumhar Naam Kya Hai, which means what's your name. the only remarkable thing was that, again, for some reason or other, I found myself leading the Desert Victory Parade in Calcutta. Why it fell to me, of all the people in Calcutta, including all the general headquarters staff, I shall never know, but we carried out a rehearsal of the route the day before the celebration day, which everything seemed to go quite well. The next day, in the parade itself, everything started off completely okay. Then after a short while, I saw, that they put up a sort of triumphal arch across the roadway, which wasn't there the day before. And so, frantically, I had to wave my little convoy of about half a dozen Bryn carriers, had to signal them to get into single file to go through this archway. And then, most embarrassingly, the saluting base was only about 100 yards after this triumphal arch. And so our scratch crew of Bren carrier drivers had to reform into double column in about 100 yards. fortunately, everything went off all right. But considering that these Bren carriers were all from base workshops and hadn't really been properly tested for further service, and the fact that the drivers were scratch crews of drivers from all sources, it was quite remarkable that the whole episode went through without much difficulty. Further along the route, there was another triumphal arch, and the Indians were pouring down what seemed to be red and pink rose petals from this arch, pouring it down onto the whole cavalcade. It didn't cross my mind to wonder whether there might not be an odd hand grenade there from the Indian nationalists. But nothing of that sort happened.
Did you ever see anything of Indian nationalist activity?
No, never did.
Was there any evidence of a famine in Calcutta at that time?
No, I never never heard any suggestions of it at all. No. No, well, it's I don't think anything anything unusual happened after that. I myself simply got the order to go and rejoin the 2nd Battalion of the Queen's, who were in a training camp somewhere near Jhansi, in what was then known as Central Provinces. When I got there, I found that the whole of 70 Div had been earmarked for General Wingate's 2nd Chindit expedition.
How much did you know about that?
I didn't really know much about it at all. I suppose we might have heard something about the previous years. Well, not the previous years. Heard about the Chindits, but I can't recall hearing very much about it at all. I don't think we really knew anything until we got the sort of training program, which then we began to find out what it was all about. I know about this time I was back as a platoon commander to start with, and we did some training on marching by compass. The area wasn't jungle, it was more or less saddle forest. So there's nothing very difficult or extraordinary about it.
What forest?
Sal. It's a particular type of tree. Nothing unusual, but except there's nothing else but the same tree. We did do a march in the new style. to go to do some watermanship training, as they called it, on a lake several miles away. The bulk of the training there proved to be teaching probably two-thirds of the other ranks to swim. Which we achieved without undue problems. But the practical side of this watermanship training was making what we called a sausage. The idea was that if we had to cross a river without the aid of any sort of boat, everyone had paired off, and with the aid of one or possibly two ground sheets and two rifles and one's equipment, one made up a sausage, which hopefully was waterproof, and tied up at both ends. And the idea was that you then swam across the river, pushing this sausage ahead all the while. It did prove to be a practical idea on this lake, but personally, I think we had considerable problems if we'd ever had to cross a river with any sort of current. Around about this time, the admin officer of our 21 column had to go into hospital. I don't know what for. And presumably, since I was a senior subaltern left in the battalion, I found myself transferred to the post of admin officer. There wasn't a great deal to do it at the time, but the main episode was organising a Christmas dinner for the troops. I don't think we're even in a tented camp at all. It's all part of training to be simply on the ground and under the elements. Although we must have had one or two tents, storage tents and so on. However, I do remember that organising all the NCOs, all the sergeants rather, to serve out the meal. I can't remember precisely what the meal was, but it wasn't far off a standard Christmas dinner. Obviously all the materials had to be supplied from army sources. But to my mind, the great thing about it was that we managed to serve out to something close on 300 troops, I suppose. We managed to serve out the Christmas meal in 20 minutes flat. And the great emphasis being to get it served quickly so that it was still hot when it came to eating.
This is at Jhansi.
This was near Jhansi, yes. I just can't remember what the place was called, but I think it's about 15 miles due east of Jhansi. Well, we were there until January, and then the time came to move forward. as all part of Wingate's 1944 enterprise.
Which column were you in yourself?
21 column. And the other half of the battalion was 22 column, of course. We went by train through Benares to a place called Gauhati on the Brahmaputra River. Crossed there onto meter gauge railway into Assam. And during the night, we arrived somewhere near Dimapur and detrained. And immediately, we were sort of hidden away in the jungle. We were in this, hidden away in the jungle for several days. It was raining the whole time. Everything was soaking wet and grey and dull. But after a few days, we did move forward up the Lido Road in lorries, driven by Chinese drivers. These were notorious for the way they drove these lorries. Most of the Lido Road was simply a long ribbon of very deep mud. Before we started actually climbing into the mountains, I remember crossing this road and the ruts in the road were more than knee-deep in mud. But the Americans had huge, probably what we'd call 10-ton lorries, and they seemed to be able to cope without any fuss at all. We were again hidden away in jungle. More of a forest rather than what I call Hollywood jungle. And during that time, we were all formed up on a sloping hillside, and General Wingate gave us a departing speech and surprised everybody by saying in so many words, well, don't overdo it physically to start with, which surprised us all because the whole training emphasis had been to drive yourself hard.
What impression did Wingate create on you?
Well, I think we felt we'd got a leader, someone who's definitely got some new ideas. And evidently forceful, and quite evidently had got some influence behind him. I just wonder if we could stop now a while. The next day, fairly early, it's pouring with rain, as usual, and we set about starting our march over the mountains into Burma. It took us practically the whole day to get the column up the first mountainside, which was almost as steep as the roof of a house. The sappers had cut some zigzag steps in the hillside, but before half the column had got past, these steps were beginning to crumble and fall away. slope was so steep that in many cases the mules had to be unloaded so that they themselves could get up the mountainside. And of course their loads had to be passed on from hand to hand. It's extremely strenuous day, raining all the time, and our leading column, number 21, had at least got onto the top of the mountain ridge by the end of the day. My recollection then was that darkness came on as soon as we'd finished climbing, and we simply had to bed down on saturated ground, wet leaves and all that sort of thing. As it was so cold, I think most people had to pair off to sleep side by side. We had been issued with some super lightweight blankets for this purpose, but overnight they got saturated from end to end. And so the very next morning, they all had to be abandoned because they were so heavy. They were very high quality, lightweight blankets, and it seemed a dreadful shame for these things to be simply discarded after one night. The various episodes... it's hard going on these mountains. To start with, it's raining all the time. It was not so much that one felt the rain, but you got saturated by the drops falling off the tops of the lofty trees. at the end of the first day, I think, despite all the rain, we were short of water. You could hear mountain streams rushing away, perhaps 1,000 or 2,000 feet below. But we, despite the rain, we had virtually no water, certainly not enough for mules. And ultimately, we had to indent for a supply, an airdrop of tanks of water.
What was your job with the column?
I was admin officer still.
And I think you were working with Tommy Atkins, whom I interviewed some.
Yes, that's right, yes. Yes, well, at this stage we... Yes, I was admin officer, and at this stage there wasn't a great deal to do stores-wise because the supply drops were more or less just standard rations and this water, and there was nothing exceptional or extra required. For practically everyone, it was simply just jolly hard going. One might slither down 1,000 feet or so down a mountainside, come to a stony stream at the bottom, and then have the job of scrambling up a similar steep hillside for another 1,000 feet or so upwards, and carry on the next piece of mountain ridge. One had to travel along the ridges, like wild animals and elephants. They all do that because the sloping sides were so steep that it's quite impossible to make any progress at all. After two or three days of really rough, hard going, we arrived at a place called Kalak Gar, where our column stopped for rest, and the Leicesters, 2nd Battalion of the Leicesters, passed through and took the lead for the whole brigade. While we're there, we had a supply drop, and I remember visiting two or three American officers who manned a small Chinese outpost not far away. And I always remember that their parting words, "May your tags never be parted." And they said, "Do you know what we mean?" I said, "No, I haven't heard that expression before." And they said, "Well, you've got your tags around your neck. If you get bumped off, they leave one on the body and the other one goes through records." By about this time, I think he must have used up a week or 10 days scrambling through the mountains. From then onwards, it was virtually downhill, and the weather improved, it stopped raining, and of course got much warmer as it went down. But I think nevertheless, it must have taken us about another week at least to get down to the Chinwend River. I think it took us 3 weeks to do the first 100 miles, all through mountains. When we got to the Chinwend River, we found that the Leicesters had completed our crossing and had gone on. So we set to cross the Chinwend, which here I think was about 300 yards wide with a fairly steady current. We proceeded mostly